Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Senior engineer James Damore is out, fired at Google after a contentious memo he wrote went viral last week. Damore argued women aren't suited for top jobs in the tech world because of their biology, argued that Google is an ideological echo chamber for suggesting otherwise. Google says they can't live with that gender stereotyping. He's gone. But the firestorm over the message and firing go on. This hour on Point, Google's blow up and women in tech. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Was Google right to fire James Damore? And what's the truth about men and women in Silicon Valley, in the tech world? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Google, big international company, people paying attention all over. This was 4 News in the United Kingdom. On Monday, Mercy Vinton, founder of Ada's List, talking about the Google internal memo written by software engineer James Damore.
I think there's a grain of truth in what he's experienced, but that doesn't mean there's a grain of truth in what he's saying. I think that's kind of the problem with this whole manifest. I call it the manifest bro, is it's really just a series of his own opinions that are really, and experiences that seem kind of just one-sided, and that's passed off as reality.
And here's another former Google engineer, Erica Baker, talking with CNN yesterday, responding to the memo.
It's ridiculous. It's full of myths that have been disproven and debunked a long time ago. And it is amazing to me that someone who is as smart as a Google engineer could continue to believe in those myths.
Okay. And here yesterday on CNBC, Chaya Cooper, product officer with Click to Fit, talking about gender bias in the tech industry.
There are plenty of programmers at Google that have gender biases, including the author of this article, and the programmer culture, all that stuff. Those are things that make women uncomfortable. Those are biases that exist in the community. And he's simply highlighting his own biases and stating he's part of the problem without realizing that's what he's saying.
Let's look at it. Joining me now in the studio is Louise Matsakis, assistant editor at Motherboard. That's Vice's tech outlet. She broke the story on the internal memo at Google that went viral like crazy. Louise, thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, Tom. How are you? It's great to be here.
Fine. So this is a 10-page memo. This is a serious thing. I've got it right here in my hand. And Google has long encouraged all kinds of debate and conversation within the company. This got lots of play within the company right away as soon as it started circulating on Friday. How did it come to you?
I don't want to talk about specific sourcing, but a couple of sources that I spoke to within Google let me know that this memo was being circulated. And originally, I didn't actually have the exact wording, but a Google employee was able to describe the contents for me. The reason I didn't have it in my hands initially is that Google's Stop Leaks program, which is designed to prevent employees from distributing this kind of information to the press, is really good at their job. So a lot of my sources were really scared to circulate the entire memo. But by Saturday, Gizmodo had circulated it. And on Monday morning, we published our own version that was completely unredacted and had all of Damore's sources.
Sounds like the Trump administration may want to talk to Google's Stop Leaks program. Did they know, those inside the company that you were talking with, did you know when you first got your hands on the news of this, what dynamite this was, is?
No, I definitely realized that I had a sensitive story in my hands, but I did not understand, I think, how much this would resonate for women and minorities throughout Silicon Valley. I think it's really exemplative of an underlying cultural problem. I think part of the reason that we really struggled with whether or not to publish Damore's name originally is that we didn't want it to be about him, because the fact that he circulated this memo and felt so comfortable with the views that he distributed is a symptom of a greater cultural problem within Silicon Valley. I don't think that he is an isolated case, and I think that the views that he holds are widespread throughout the valley.
You've been all over it since it came out. Take us through the memo. What's he say? We've heard it summarized, but you've been directly in it. What's he say?
Right. So I've read it a couple of times and I've gone over all of his sourcing. He kind of starts by saying, I'm not against diversity efforts, but this is kind of my perspective on how they might fail. So basically, he kind of looks at the issue of gender diversity specifically pretty much from a narrow evolutionary psychology perspective that kind of cherry picks a number of psychology studies to kind of make these broad average generalizations about the way that women are. But I think it really erases a lot of cultural factors. I think it doesn't mention, it erases LGBTQ and trans identity. I think that it erases the cultural experiences of women and kind of reduces the way that they are on average only to their biology. And then towards the end of the memo, he discusses what he feels like is an ideological chamber, as the title of the memo is.
Echo chamber.
Exactly. He thinks that Google has this strong leftist bias that kind of keeps out conservative voices. And he kind of discusses, the ways in which that's harmful. He goes on a side rant about Marxism at one point and how the failure of Marxism. It gets a little kind of derailed towards the end of the memo, but he's essentially saying that he feels that conservative voices are not welcome at Google and that that's, problematic for the business.
Says that Google's efforts to reach equal representation of women in technology and leadership, we're quoting him here, unfair, divisive, and bad for business. Of course, the fact is Google is very far from anything like equal representation. Almost 70% of the workforce is male. 80% of the technical staff there is male. I mean, I'm not judging that. That's just a fact. He's out now, and it appears he's threatening legal action against Google for having put him out. They said that this just doesn't fit with the message that we need to put out. And he's gone. Is he going to sue?
I believe that he has filed the complaint with the National Labor Relations Board. What the result of that complaint will be is not something I can really speculate on. But I think that the fact that he filed the complaint in the first place shows that he hasn't internalized or kind of reflected on why this memo might have been upsetting to, 30% of Google staff or more.
And Google itself in Silicon Valley, they've been talking about gender issues for a long time now. Uber and all the rest, there's been so much going on. Is this a big deal there or just one more pebble in the pond?
I think this is a kind of example of this issue of gender in Silicon Valley coming to its head. I think that people like Damore in the Valley kind of come from this place that code is perfect and that computation has done so much for the world, which is, of course, true. But I think they fail to realize that such a small number and such a one mindset kind of, built these companies like Google. And I think they fail to imagine what could have happened if it was a more inclusive place from the beginning. What would a company like Uber look like if it was, designed as an inclusive place from the start? What would a place like Google look like if it had more female voices, if it had more Black voices? And I think that that's kind of the failure of imagination there on Damore's part.
You cover the tech industry. Doesn't that just that perspective that you just articulated great against what a lot of the people who have been leaders in tech, I mean, they say, we want to change the world. Don't give us this inclusion stuff. We want to change the world.
I think there's this misconception that computation can save us all and that all we need is the right code and that if we get the right algorithm, the world will be saved. And I think that erases the importance of history, of culture, of so many other parts of the world, that if we just look at this as an engineering problem, I think that ultimately Damore took the issue of diversity and looked at it like a bug in the code, which it's not. It's a much wider issue than that. And I think that was kind of the failure there. And he was like, I just want to look at, this one empirical perspective. But and it's really exemplative.
Google CEO Sundar Pichai sending out a message to employees there saying that parts of the memo violate our code of conduct and cross the line by advancing harmful gender stereotypes in our workplace. And Damore gone. Louise Matsakis broke the story of the memo, advice at Motherboard there. She's with me in the studio. With us right now is the woman who heads up Harvey Mudd College, Engineering, Science, and Math College in Claremont, California, joins us today from British Columbia. First woman president of the college, renowned computer scientist and scholar herself, Maria Clave, joins us. Maria, President Clave, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Great to be here.
What do you take away from this explosion around the Google memo and then firing?
I agree very much with Louise that this is indicative of, you know, an ongoing issue that has been present for, you know, a long period of time, and that, you know, Damore is not the only person who has these views, and that I think the reaction to it is just a lot of women and a lot of men are just really tired of people making excuses to explain why women are not as present in software engineering positions or technical leadership roles in the industry.
I mean, this was not an excuse. This was an active, positive argument, as he saw it anyway, that it was kind of a fool's errand to expect women to be equally represented, that they're not, you know, by nature, was his argument, suited for the same level of tech accomplishment and leadership. What do you say to that?
Well, what I say to that is, at Harvey Mudd College, we're roughly 50-50 in terms of women majoring in computer science, engineering, and physics, which are the three areas where women are the least represented. And the way we've gotten to that is by really thinking about how we teach disciplines in a way that makes them accessible and engaging for everyone. And so it's certainly true that historically the way we teach technical disciplines is we teach the abstraction, the theory first, and then we add the applications later. And by later, I mean maybe 2 or 3 years later. And one of the things that has been shown to be true at a number of universities and colleges, if you add applications and context in the introductory courses and, you know, you keep the technical rigor, all of the challenge, all of the stuff there, but you simply point out why what you might be doing with certain theoretical concepts is actually important, how you can solve real problems with them, all of a sudden, not only are women really interested, but a lot of men who wouldn't have been interested either are. And so this whole idea about, you know, we're born with certain interests and that's all we can, you know, we have to focus on those interests to be happy or to be successful, it's just rubbish.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Chances are you're confident when it comes to your work, your hobbies, and your life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same level of confidence when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. Rocket Mortgage is simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumeraccess.org, number 3030.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about Google in the center of the Silicon Valley storm now over women and tech. A top engineer out at Google after arguing that women don't cut it. And boy, has that got the world on fire. You can join us this hour. What do you think? Was Google right to fire James Damore after he put out this 10-page memo that went out ultimately to the whole world? Women, men in tech, what do you actually see? What's the reality? Did Damore have a point? A prejudice? Should he be allowed to voice it? Is it too destructive? And women, what in particular, what is your experience in the tech scene? Have you felt welcome, confident? Is it good to get Damore's view out in the open, or a problem? Louise Matsakis is with us from Vice's Motherboard. She broke the story of the internal memo at Google that ultimately went very viral. Maria Clave is with us. She's president of Harvey Mudd College in Claremont, California. They bring a lot of women engineers into the tech scene, and she's watching very closely how all that unfolds. Tracy Chow joins us in just a moment. She's been all over Silicon Valley as a software engineer and entrepreneur herself. A couple of calls first. Bill in Omaha, Nebraska. Bill, you're on the air. What do you see?
Hi, Tom. How are you today?
Okay.
Well, I've been in the tech industry for 33 years now. In the Midwest, we may not be Silicon Valley, but I think we have all the same issues and things that anyone would have.
Yep.
I would say his assertions about women in tech or anything else are just ridiculous and not even worth comment. But he is exposing a pervasive, maybe, attitude in any male-dominated profession, engineering, law enforcement. I work at a utility, tech, and you know, whether it exposes anything or not is up for debate, but women know this. They don't tell young women in grade school that it'll be a great path if you choose engineering or you choose tech. So it just becomes this circular thing, and that's why we have all the programs to try to recruit women into professions, because it's a challenge.
So you're in the field, and you've seen it, and you see a kind of self-fulfilling dynamic going on here. But let me hold that right there. I've got so many callers, and I want to get to Tracy Chow as well, but I appreciate that perspective from Omaha. Let me get one more from, thank you, Bill, Austin, Texas. Amias, you're on. Thank you for calling.
Hey, Tom. Great. First time, long time. Great to be on the line. Yeah, I've studied, you know, gender studies, and so obviously I will agree with all the points your guests have made about, you know, the sort of incorrect assumptions made by the original memo. But I do wish that Google would have handled it a different way. I mean, I think this could have been a great teachable moment to have this conversation we're having right now inside Google, as far as breaking down point by point why, you know, what he was expressing is actually, you know, factually and scientifically incorrect, as opposed to just sort of firing him and shutting down the conversation. I think it's an important conversation to have, unless we have these conversations to tell people why, you know, these sort of biological truisms are incorrect. We're not actually going to get anywhere as a society going forward.
So, I mean, you're in gender studies. You describe yourself as a feminist, but you're saying let's have the conversation anyway.
Yeah, I think it's important to have the conversation as opposed to just firing him, you know, to actually bring in people who are informed by the subject, like your guest today, and as they've talked about, you know, show the actual evidence or evidentiary reasons why he's incorrect, as opposed to just firing him, because I think that sort of just puts fuel on the fire of these sort of reactionary, you know, alt-right people who think that they're being too politically correct.
Let me take that to you, Maria Clave, and I appreciate your call, Amias. Was Google wrong to fire him, President Clave? I mean, after all, you know, there's a kind of commitment to free expression that's supposed to be part of the tech world. Google has celebrated that. On the other hand, I'm looking at another senior engineer who recently left the company, Yonatan Zunger, saying that his comments have created a textbook hostile workplace environment. If you say women are structurally, you know, unsuited, but should they have let the conversation play out?
So one of the things, at least to my knowledge, is that we haven't actually seen a clear statement from Google for exactly why they fired him. We've certainly seen the statement from Sundar saying that it's not okay to make, you know, a third of your coworkers feel undervalued, and this kind of comment is not okay. But we don't actually know what conversations Google had with Damore before making the decision to fire him. So I'm always careful about personnel issues, because often there are things that you can't say in public about a severance or a termination. Mm. The question, I mean, one of the issues I think is, there's a certain degree to which if you bring in experts to debate somebody like Damore, you're giving more weight in some ways to his argument than it deserves. And we've been having discussions about this for at least my entire career, and I'm 66 mm-hmm. years old, so mm-hmm. you know, let's say at least 45 years, I've been in discussions like this, and I've been the first woman to hold my job for roughly the last 30 years, mm-hmm. and I cannot tell you just how many times I have had somebody not listen to me, not expect me to have any technical knowledge, simply because I'm female. And so there's a part of me that says, you know, we're probably 25 years past the time when we really should be having these discussions.
25 years late, that puts another spin on it. If you're just doing it over and over again, yet it's fresh news out of Google. Maria Clave, Louise Matsakis, please stand by. Tracy Chow joins us right now. She's in Cape Town, South Africa, but knows California and Silicon Valley very, very well. Software engineer, entrepreneur, has worked all over Silicon Valley, including a little time at internships at Google, Facebook. She's a founding advisor at Project Include. It's a nonprofit headed by Ellen Pao, who made news herself on this front. Tracy Chow, thank you very much for being with us. What do you see in this Google story?
Hi, Tom. Thanks so much for having me. What I see is someone who has presented a view that is widely held in Silicon Valley but is not cool to hold, and presented it in a way that seems almost scientific enough that it can be taken as truth. And that is what is so frustrating to me, is that he is trying to stitch together this narrative around why there is not more diversity in the Valley, and pretend that that's okay. And I think a lot of this also comes from almost maybe a self-justification of why more white and Asian men have been successful. And the people who are in these positions of power and prevalence want to justify that they deserve it. And in this way, with this manifesto, this memo, he's presented a seemingly scientific case for that.
Is there an audience for that in Silicon Valley that says, that's going to say, yeah? I mean, we hear about bro-gramming and there's a bro culture. You say it's not cool. Is it cool or not cool in Silicon Valley to have this outlook?
So I think where the Valley is right now, most companies will at least say that they care about diversity and inclusion. Whether or not there is true commitment to it is another story, but I think it's now at the point where most people will at least say that they care about diversity. So there's that. At the same time, there are many people who are skeptical of diversity and inclusion efforts, like James Damore. And I have also personally interacted with many such people who are very skeptical of diversity and inclusion efforts, but don't feel like they're allowed to say so, which may be a good thing. There are these undercurrents that are now coming up.
It's there. It's not like it came out of nowhere. It's there. It continues to be there.
There's plenty of people who believe this. They've just not been able to voice it because they know that if they say they don't care about diversity and inclusion, they'll be painted as sexist and racist, which they may well be. But they know that they should keep quiet on those fronts generally. But what is so seductive about this memo is that it presents the arguments in a way that seems very rational and scientific, and so it feels okay to give voice to these doubts and skepticisms about diversity and inclusion.
I mean, this senior engineer was a very accomplished man. He studied molecular and cellular biology at the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign, did research in computational biology at Harvard and Princeton and MIT. You know, was in a PhD program at Harvard before he dropped out, went on to Google. It's not as though he hasn't been around. Stand by, Tracy. It's great to have you here. Adam Grant joins us right now from Philadelphia. He's professor of management and psychology at the University of Pennsylvania's Wharton School of Business. Adam Grant, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom.
So what about the case made by James Damore here? He's put it in a kind of scientific trappings, like, look, this is just the way it is. Women's biology is different, and should we take this seriously? What are the facts of the matter?
Well, I think if you actually look at the evidence, we have meta-analyses, studies of studies, to look at what gender differences exist, and they're much smaller in most domains than most people believe. The first thing that's really clear is that there's no aptitude or ability difference in quantitative reasoning or math. Boys are not better than girls, period. Secondly, actually, girls are better, if anything, on all the verbal dimensions. And so if you take any job which requires communication, which is all jobs last time I checked, you should expect a female advantage. But if you take ability out of the equation, then what James and a lot of others have suggested is that there are fundamental differences in interest.
Did you say take ability out of the equation?
Yeah.
What do you mean by that?
As in, if we accept the strong evidence that ability differences don't explain the gender gap because uh-huh. there aren't ability differences
okay.
favoring men.
Uh-huh.
Then, you know, what you'll hear is, well, it's all about interests. And, you know, the data show that men are more interested in working with things and women are more interested in working with people. And there are a couple big problems with that argument. One is that those interests are not biologically determined. They're hugely malleable. And two, women and men are actually equally interested in working with data. And so you should see lots of women in data-oriented jobs, which many computer software and engineering jobs are, and you don't. So there's obviously some bias at play, and then the question is, what kind of bias is it?
And if there is a cultural envelope here that may steer women one way or another, steer their interests one way or another, if that's what you're saying, is this senior engineer wrong to say, well, okay, that happened, and so here's our workforce, so let's take the men, because their interest is stronger.
Yeah, I would say he's wrong to say that, because we have systematic evidence that highly qualified women are discriminated against when they apply for these kinds of jobs. Google's own evidence internally showed that women engineers, in order to be stars, had to rate themselves a 5 on a 1 to 5 scale, where 5 is basically, I am the single best engineer that I know, whereas successful men rated themselves a 4 on that same scale. And, you know, there are lots of ways to interpret that, but one way you could look at that data is to say, look, you know, if you want to be a successful female engineer at Google, you have to have a ton of extra confidence, and you have to be that much better than your peers to get respected. Whereas, you know, to be a successful male engineer, you just have to be extremely good, not world class. And, you know, that's a definite source of bias.
Jennifer in New York is calling. Jennifer, thank you. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call. I've read the memo about twice, and I can't find the sexism in it. I'm a scientific person. I see myself as having a scientific mind. I find it quite hypocritical for people who are upset over needing more women in the science field, upset over the science.
In other words, you know, we've been hearing this is bogus interpretation of science, but you don't buy it. You don't see it when you read the memo.
No, I read the science as science. I don't get upset over the facts. If it's, you know, if science is reality.
Adam Grant, did you find the science in here? Respond to Jennifer, if you would, Adam.
I found a lot of claims about science. And, you know, interestingly, they came from an engineer whose LinkedIn bio said he had a PhD from Harvard and has now been updated to say, in fact, he only has a master's from Harvard. So, you know, I have to wonder about the accuracy of representation just from that. But, you know, when you look at the actual data, no, I don't think you can make summary statements about science. Science is messy. It shows.
I mean, you've made some summary statements about science in the last 5 minutes.
Sure, I have. I have, but they're full of contingencies, right? So on average, there aren't significant differences between men and women in ability. That's true in the U.S. If you look at math, it's not true verbally. It's also not true in other countries. And so what we need to do is we need to sit down and ask, okay, for what groups of women, in what situations, is there likely to be bias, and when is there not?
Beth in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Beth, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I am a software engineer. Mm-hmm. I'm a developer. I've been doing this for 30 years now, so I've lived through this. And I just got to say, this whole thing makes me so angry. But what makes me angry is not the guy's memo. It's the press reaction, starting from things like your very first sentence in how you characterized what the guy actually said. What he said over and over and over in his memo was, on average, by the way, just like your speaker, your guest just said, on average, women are less drawn to software, on average. And while he said some very crazy things in there, like calling women neurotic, he was clearly frustrated in showing 2 points.
Mm-hmm.
One, that on average, maybe men are drawn more to software than women, which, you know, honestly, may very well be the case, and the science on that is certainly not clear. Second point, he was clearly not in favor of bias in hiring. And I am not in favor of bias in hiring because it doesn't do women any favors.
Even if it's like pro-diversity bias. He doesn't want that kind either, any kind. Mm-hmm.
You know, Google calls me every single year for a job. They check on me every single year to see if I will come over there. Do you know why? It's not because they know me from Joe Schmo. It's because I'm a woman. I've been doing this for 30 years. When I get into a company, it is true. I agree with what one of the guests said about it takes longer for women to prove themselves. That's certainly true. But that's on the individuals that work there. That's not an institutional thing. All I have seen my entire career is every company I've ever worked for wanted to get more women. The fact of the matter is they're hard to find. And the women that are in it are great, just as good as the men. I know I'm as good as any man I've ever worked with. But you know, the truth is the numbers just aren't there, and I can understand. I don't want to be called. I don't want to know that somebody called me for a job just because I'm a woman. How do you think that makes my coworkers feel about me? They're going to assume I had some advantage. That's going to make them think that I'm worse than I am, and that's why I have to work harder to prove I'm so damn good.
So, but when a senior engineer at Google says women are neurotic, they're not as well qualified for this business.
He didn't. okay, he did call them neurotic, which I agree, that was not cool. He said a lot of things were inflammatory, but you, again, your character, he kept saying, on average, women are more nurturing than men, average. He repeatedly stated that people should be treated as individuals.
I got the caveats, but we also got his bottom line. But I hear that. I hear that. Beth, I'm sorry we're up against a break here, but we'll come back and look at it. And I'm very glad for your call. Adam Grant, I know we have to let you go from the Wharton School of Business, but it's great to have you with us, and I appreciate you joining us today. Thank you, Adam. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about Google in the center of the Silicon Valley storm over women and tech. A top engineer out after arguing over how the company ought to look at diversity, over how it ought to look at women in its ranks. You've got about women accounting for 30%, 31% of Google's workforce at this point, 20% of its technical staff, so I'm sure that's on their minds. He's arguing don't put it too high, and he got pretty vivid in his descriptions of why. You can join us this hour. What do you think? Was Google right to fire this senior editor who put it out there in his 10-page memo that's gone very, very viral around the world now? Women, men in tech, what do you actually see? Maria Clave is with us. She is president of Harvey Mudd College, the engineering, science, and math college in Claremont, California. First woman president of that college. Louise Matsakis is with us from Motherboard Advice. She broke the story of the Google memo that's gotten so much attention now. Tracy Chow is with us from Cape Town, South Africa today, a longtime software engineer and entrepreneur in Silicon Valley who's been watching all of this. Tracy, I wish you would respond to the caller we had just before the break there, Beth, who's been 30 years, she says, in software, and she doesn't want to see this guy shouted down for what he said. She wants to be weighed on her own merits. She doesn't want, when she comes into a new company, she doesn't want the others there, men there, thinking she's come in because she hasn't come in on her own steam. You know, let me fight on my own merits, she says, and don't shout down James Damore.
I found her comments a little bit frustrating in that I think we are still getting too much into the weeds of these scientific studies that are on very small differences and ignoring the larger picture of gender discrimination and bias. And I think she even admitted that there are more obstacles for women in the workplace. And I think that is what diversity and inclusion efforts are trying to address, trying to level out that playing field so that everyone has the same chances to succeed. And what James Damore is doing with his memo is trying to justify the disparities with, honestly, what I think is pseudoscience, and trying to make it okay for there to be these differences and justify discriminatory behavior. And so when I hear people say they just want to be judged on their own merits and they don't want to have any of this gender discussion at all, I think what they're missing is that we do need to have these discussions and dismantle these structural problems before everyone can be fairly evaluated and given these chances to succeed.
We've got lots of response here on Facebook. Dee says, as a woman in tech, I think there should be more women in STEM fields where there fewer misogynistic guys like this one in our classes and workplaces, she writes. Kelly says, you cannot expect to get away with crying free speech when you treat an entire group of colleagues with blatant disrespect based on their gender. But then here's another listener says, the central issue for me is this man's right to discuss company grievances with coworkers, which is a longstanding and important right in labor law. Maria Clave, what about his right to speak up? I mean, he's a trained engineer himself. He's a serious person. He's in the midst of colleagues. Should he be out?
I sort of think about this. What if he was actually, what if he was actually somebody who was mentoring junior colleagues or coaching people? And, you know, would you really want someone who essentially assumes that most women just aren't naturally suited or interested in engineering to be in that kind of role? So I certainly wouldn't particularly want to have someone like that. And, I mean, I have no problem with him, having opinions and voicing those opinions. But I think that it's problematic, particularly if you're in a reasonably senior position, which I gather level 5 at Google level 5 software engineer at Google is a reasonably senior position. I don't, and if you're at a company that makes it very clear that they're committed to increasing the gender diversity in their technical workforce, then I don't think it's appropriate for him to be, you know, to be saying things that are clearly completely at odds with what the company is trying to achieve.
Louise, you brought this memo to light in the first place, outside of Google. Inside, lots of people were reading it. How does it fit into overall policy here? Is this an issue because Google and others maybe in Silicon Valley are, after all the controversy over gender in the last year or two, are they pushing harder than before to bring in more women, to highlight diversity as a value in the company? What do you think brought this to the fore now?
It's difficult to say why this memo, you know, why he chose to publish it now or why it came to the forefront at this exact moment. But I think for me, why it was newsworthy was not necessarily its contents, but was the reaction that it was having within the company. It's, you know, a major tech firm that, you know, is on everyone's radar, and it was creating such a stir. I think that there were at least 9 or so people speaking on Twitter about the memo before it was released and clearly were upset. So I think that it really struck a nerve, and that's kind of what was newsworthy to me about it, rather than him or the contents of the memo, was really the discussion that it was sparking. And I think to you know, go back to speculate whether or not it was the right decision to fire him, I think that that might seem like an ideological decision on Google's part. But I actually think, as Charlie Worzel wrote at BuzzFeed, that it was actually a routine HR decision. I think that it's really difficult for Google to try and make move, like, do you move him to another team? And do you move several people around to different teams? Is he never going to be able to manage people? I think that it kind of came down to Google, you know, we need to make an HR decision here. And the clear move was to remove him from the workplace. I don't necessarily think reading into that decision as Google making any sort of specific ideological stance. I think that's, you know, overreacting to what Sundar really had to do.
I mean, it does come into a wider political picture, though, that Silicon Valley now seems more wired into than ever. You've got Julian Assange, the founder of WikiLeaks, saying on Twitter, according from the Times, that censorship is for losers, and he's offering to hire Damore. You've got
right.
Steven Pinker at Harvard, the cognitive scientist there, that, you know, this can drive a big sector of tech into the arms of Trump. He fires employees. He wrote a memo about women in tech jobs. Silicon Valley is part of a bigger national conversation now, not just sitting out on its own lily pod in California.
Right. I think that's absolutely true. And I think the fact that this caught on to so many different parts of our culture, I think, I think that Damore now is doing the rounds of right-wing YouTubers. I know that he's doing media appearances. As you said, Julian Assange commented on him. I think every right-wing media outlet has a story about this at this point. Really shows that there is really a cultural divide. And I think, of course, there is some, as, you know, one of the callers said, that she doesn't want to be judged, you know, just based on her gender or feel like she's just a diversity hire when she has, you know, good skills. I think that it shows that there is, you know, a strong opinion on either side of the aisle, no matter where you fall. I've definitely heard from a lot of people both within and outside Google who agree with the memo. I heard from a lot of people who are really upset by it. I think that it, whether or not you agree with it or agree with parts of it, I think that it has, you know, garnered such a strong reaction from, you know, both people who agree and, you know, vehemently disagree.
Linnea in Asheville, North Carolina. Linnea, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I am a structural engineer here in Asheville, and my mother has a PhD in neutron physics and spent her entire career at the Oak Ridge National Lab.
Mm-hmm.
So this is not just a tech issue. This is any kind of STEM condition. I was the first female in 4 years to take AP Physics at my high school, which was an excellent high school.
Mm-hmm.
So it goes back to, you know, in middle school, you start hearing, oh, you know, girls, math isn't cool, that kind of thing. And until you can address the earliness, you need something. As much as I despise being hired because I'm female, you need something along the lines of diversity to get any kind of women who have stuck it out that long enough to be in there to support the upcoming women in STEM fields. The other thing that I'd like to say is people have been using fake science to justify whatever they want to say for, you know, since the dawn of time. There are still people today who think the Earth is flat. And there, you know, if you look back in our history, there were people who used science to say that Africans were three-fifths human. It just drives me nuts. People can manipulate science to say, you know, if you cherry pick, you can say whatever you want to.
Are you surprised, Linnea, are you surprised to hear a senior engineer at Google, more than here, to have the news of him sort of pounding this out on 10 pages of you know, tough argument? Are you surprised that he's putting it out there, this message?
No. I'm really sort of, I would be surprised if any female in a STEM field were surprised that there were men who thought that women weren't good enough to do this job. That's part of one of the reasons that I started my own firm, not because of any specific thing here in Asheville, but just the overall experience of being able to now pick my clients. So if I get a whiff of, you can't do this because you're female, I say, oh, my schedule's real full right now.
And you're gone. Google, working with the whole world there. Linnea, I appreciate your call. Tracy, you know, there's the complaint that this is there from the get-go, that this is there from very early on, and that you need a cohort of women inside to bring others along behind. Is that Google's responsibility? Is that Google's job?
I don't know that that is necessarily Google's responsibility. I would say that that focus on the pipeline and the educational pipeline is a little bit of a distraction from some issues that we have in the industry. And so if you just look at retention rates of women in tech, those are already pretty alarming. So women who enter tech, so now we're looking at people who've already invested quite a bit of their lives into becoming proficient, acquiring the skills to enter the tech industry. If you look at these women, they will leave tech at more than twice the rate than their male peers do. And so there's something about the industry itself which is causing women to exit. And that's something that we need to address within industry instead of trying to shift the blame into earlier in the pipeline and say that the problem is with education. And so even if we just look at that part about people coming in, women coming in, minorities coming in, and building an inclusive environment, there's already a ton of work for companies themselves to work on there.
Calum in Austin, Texas. Calum, thanks for calling. You're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Yeah, so I just had a quick little comment here. Basically, first off, I'm a computer science student here at Texas State University. Mm-hmm. I live in Austin, Texas, and I had a comment to make that basically innovation is something that all these tech companies are looking for, right? All the big companies are looking to do the next big thing, you know, change the world, make it a better place. And the only way to really achieve that is to include everybody. Diversity and inclusion drives that innovation to make that thing that is really going to actually change the world. And with the gender gap that we have right now, I just feel like it's not there yet. We're not going to make it if we continue to have these traditional idealistic views of only men can achieve the you know, the next big thing in software. Because I work in a big tech company too, by the way. But anyways, I work with a lot of women who are way smarter than I am, way better at my job than I am. And you have some awesome guests with you who are just, you know, huge leaders in the field too. And I just think it's so important that we include everybody, not just women, but also, you know, culturally and ethnically and everything. Just inclusion is what's going to make the big difference in actually being able to change the world in this field.
Inclusion ultimately as a driver of the kind of change Silicon Valley is looking for. I don't know if James Damore sees it that way, but I got it, Caleb. And one more, Sarah in Dunedin, Florida. Sarah, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I just wanted to make a comment. When I was listening, my daughter started her first day of school today. She's in third grade. We were listening to NPR on the drive, and when she was hearing this story about Google,
yeah,
she's somebody who does math like she breathes, and it was so disappointing. But then I think, you know what, in 15 years, when she's waiting and going into the workforce, I think that all these guys, it's just another example of them being afraid of change. Like, the tone of this quote-unquote manifesto is very obviously discriminatory, and it's just, I hope, like the earlier caller said, that it's not going to take another 25 years for them to get over themselves.
Sarah, we wish the very best to your daughter in third grade on her first day of school today. Maria Clave, respond to that. You're educating a new generation. You've been in this for decades and still battling on this front. Do we get beyond this at some point? When? How?
I think we are getting beyond it. I think this is a, you know, it's unfortunate that this is happening. It's unfortunate that there is still so much bias in the workplace. I totally agree with Tracy that, you know, we have work to do against bias at every stage in the pipeline. And, you know, one of the things I feel incredibly happy about is that we can actively celebrate that there are girls and young women who are amazing at math, because I breathed math too from the time I was born, and I was the only girl in my advanced math class, and I did so much better than everyone else in the class that the teacher, who's female, used to make fun of the boys, look, you're being beaten by a girl. And, you know, this is, we have so much evidence that women can excel in every discipline and that men can excel in every discipline. And, you know, it's just time to move on past this and start working on teaching people, hiring people, engaging people at work in a way that welcomes everyone, makes everyone feel supported and included.
Louise, do you think we're moving past this, or is this Silicon Valley moving more deeply into the culture wars?
I do think that progress has been made. I think the fact that people felt that they could respond to this memo and that the overwhelming reaction within Google, to my understanding, was to push back against this is evidence that we are getting somewhere.
Tracy, do you share that confidence?
I'm cautiously optimistic that we are seeing a little bit of positive change.
Well,
lots of hedging there.
Yeah, we hear lots of hedging there, and I'm not sure how James Damore sees it all today, but he's on the outside looking in now. We'll look to see if there's a lawsuit to follow here and where that goes. Very grateful to all of you for being with us today. Tracy Chow with Project Include joining us today from Cape Town, South Africa. Thank you very much for joining us, Tracy.
Thank you for having me.
Maria Clave, president of Harvey Mudd College in Claremont, California, right in the middle of the engineering, science, and math education push. Maria Clave, thanks so much for your time.
A pleasure talking with all of you.
And Louisa Matsakis with Motherboard Advice. Thanks, Louise.
Thanks, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.